Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Monster Truck Outlaws West podcast. And wow, we're hitting a pretty unique number tonight, episode number 20. It's a landmark in our podcast for sure. It's hard to think. We've already gone through 20 episodes in only a matter of months. So it's awesome to be here. I'm joined with Phil. Phil, how are you doing tonight?
What's going on, everybody? Another Friday night, another podcast.
Another podcast, you are right, and this is a special one for sure. We're going to kick it old school with Bruce Gault.
Bruce still makes very successful runs with the little tires on the van. He's tough. He's real tough.
The owner of the Barbarian Van, welcome, Bruce Gault. How are you doing tonight?
Good evening. I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Great to have you here.
Great to have you. Good to be here. This should be kind of fun.
It's going to be fun, for sure. Let's get it started. You know, Bruce, not a lot of people know, how did you get your start in motorsports, and that how did that lead to you, you know, jacking up your van?
Well, back in the 70s, I was into vans. So I had a van club back east, up around Chicago area, Aurora, Illinois. And we were customizing vans. We set up a couple of van clubs back there.
Watch.
And around 75, I saw a four-wheel drive van new on a car lot. And I go, man, I got to have that thing. It was pretty cool. So I purchased it and I started playing around with it. We started modifying a little bit of a lift here, wheels, tires, that kind of thing. And back east, we had a lot of places where you could go four-wheel in. They would call them third rails. They're out in the middle of nowhere. And occasionally you break stuff. So you guys are familiar with George Carpenter and Bob Chandler, I'm sure, by now.
Yes.
Well, George Carpenter was my mechanic back in Aurora. He and Bob and I were doing pulls, truck pulls, but we had van. Bob had a van. I had a van. They were trying to get us into a different classification we didn't want to be in, and that's how I met that gentleman. Went down to St. Louis or wherever it was to a four-wheel drive meeting, came back. Everything was pretty cool. And then about a year and a half later, I moved out to California. And I just I run a machine shop. That's what I've been doing most of my life as a machinist. I went to a show. I heard about this guy, Bigfoot. They just kept saying, hey, Bigfoot, Bigfoot. So I go to the show to see it in San Francisco. And who do I see on the floor? It's Bob Chandler. And then I see George Carpenter. He's running the show with FRO. And I walk down to the end of the bleachers. I go, hey, George. And he recognized me. And we talked for a while. And one thing led to another. He said, well, if you ever put anything together, let me know. We'll get you out here. And that's kind of how I started into the whole thing. Then from there, one of the guys that worked with me had a brother that was building a four-wheeler in Fremont, California. His name was Brian Cardiff. And I talked to Brian a couple of times because his brother worked with me. And, hey, I got some Deuce and Hass and some tires. If you want them, I'll sell them to you. I'm going to go bigger. I go, well, you know what? Nobody's ever done a van before. I think it'd be kind of cool because I did a lot of shows and stuff with the van, just lifted a little bit. And I'm thinking, maybe this might be my break. Didn't really know anyone. very limited places to work on it, but I said, the hell with it. I'll go ahead and take the leap. So I bought them from him, started putting it together, contacted George Carpenter again. The Carpenter says, you got to have a paint job or something. You just can't come out here just with a plain vehicle, because that's the way standards were back then. So that's where the Barbarian came from. And I thought, well, I'd like to play with it a little bit. I had long hair and everything at the time. Barbarian was a cool movie and Schwarzenegger was in it. And I thought, well, I could play with the name a little bit. So we started doing some artist sketch. So we made sickles and swords and stuff like that out of the letters. And next thing you know, it stuck. I loved it. And I ran that name until I retired.
So tell us a little bit about the van, you know, what kind of specs you had on the van. You know, what motor were you running at the time?
Well, I built a 4-bolt main, small block 400, fuelie heads, Pete Jackson gear drive, 30 over. I had a cam in it. It was just a cleaned up, reliable motor. And it gave me all the torque I wanted for the deuce and a half. So I just stuck with that. Later on, I went to nitrous on it, Predator carburetor, those kind of things. And it helped a little bit. And I never really got to the point where I was going to go to an injected engine, but that was going to be the next thing forward. Otherwise, I'd have to ruin the whole way that the motor was put in the van. That's why I stuck with the 400.
Another unique trait with your Barbarian van was that it wasn't running 66-inch tires at the time. It was mainly always on 48s. Right. Why was that the tire of choice?
Because it was part of the deal with the deuce and a half. I thought I could do something other people weren't doing. I didn't see any other vehicles out there on the circuits, the few shows that I'd seen with 48s. And once I put the truck together, I found out I could do just about anything anyone else could. There were some limitations, but for the most part, I could go out there, put on a good show, and I was happy with it, and the people seemed to be happy with it. So I stuck with the 48s for, 4, 5, 6 years, I think. Then finally, around 89, I went to the 5-tons and 66s, and then shortly after that, I retired. But while I had it with the 48s, it was easy to transport. A lot of times I'd have to take the tires off, but there were other occasions when I could drive it like that. People thought it was street legal. It never was.
So I got to ask, did you prefer the 48s or 66s? You talked about there's advantages and disadvantages. What do you think about that?
Well, I really like the 48s. And the worst part for me in the very beginning was nobody had ramps back then. Everybody was just going raw cars. And if you pick the wrong cars for a truck with 48s, it made it really difficult. Even though I had Detroit lockers front and rear, you still had issues. Like if you get a big Ford station wagon, or what was the other car? Ramblers. Rambler station wagons were my nemesis. I could never get over those things properly. I'd get up on them, but they were just too high and square. But it just afforded me a lot of maneuverability. I had a lot of fun with it. And then I found that set of chrome rims. I forgot where I got those now. I think they're out of Florida. I originally started with the steel wheels, and I found the chrome aluminum rims, and I put those on there, and I was even more happy with it. I did some offsets with it, and it was just I got so used to driving it like that, I had a blast with it that way. Back then, we didn't have as many safety concerns, even though the van had like a backup alarm, tranny blanket, all the loops, all that kind of stuff. You still got beat up. I had a 5-point harness on there. But when I knew I did a good show and people really liked it, after the show, the next day, I'd look at my arms, they're all black and blue, and, it must have been a good show. So for me, it was a lot of fun.
Another unique spec in your van was the stereo system. I caught up with an old newspaper article. What about that?
I'm trying to think. I think it was around 500 or 800 watts. I don't really remember how many watt system it was. But I had built-in speakers in the side, full interior in the vehicle, and then I added a roll bar and everything into it. But I could open up the back doors, crank up the stereo, and everybody go, whoa, where's that come from? Oh, it's coming out of the race truck, not somebody else's. And we'd go to mud bogs and stuff like that and just have a good time. And it was a way of partying and still keeping it serious because everything was enclosed. That was hard to do in a pickup truck. The other issue was van... Me being with the first van, or close to the first van, there's another gentleman, Olaker, I guess you guys know him. He came out just about the same time as I did, but when I decided to build the van, I wanted to keep it on the stock frame. even though it was a thin frame, I boxed it all in, reinforced everything. And I thought, well, this is kind of good. I'm not taking a body, putting it on something else and then making that work like that. I just wanted it to be as pure as I could and still do the job. So that's where it ended up.
So all in all, how long did it take you to build Barbarian?
Well, I worked on, it was about 160 miles away from where I worked. I worked in San Jose, California, but I built the van up in the mountains, up in the Sierras. Brian had a shop up there where his parents lived. And he said, hey, if you want to use this shop to put your truck together, you're more than welcome to use it. So Mr. Cardiff was kind enough to let me have that space and a couple of people and a welder, a guy that did welding up there. And we probably had a rolling vehicle in about 3.5-4 months. And then I brought it back down to San Jose and started finishing everything like steering, hydraulics, all that kind of stuff. So probably total build, probably 6 months.
And make sure everybody that's listening right now, if you have a question for Bruce, make sure you leave it in the comments. We'll make sure we get to it at some point here on the podcast. So just fast forward a little bit. Where were your first events with the van? Did you do a lot of show and shine events, or are you actually competing with the truck right off the bat?
I did a couple of show and shine right at the very beginning, but then I was already out in competition. We ran it for a good 6 or 8 months with SRO and a couple of other people. Mr. Curcio, Steve Curcio, was my promoter for a while. There were some other people in California that wanted to use it. So we did a lot of like small fairs and truck pulls, things like that. Then we finally got rooked into going to South America. And I thought, wow, you know, there's not too many people going overseas with a monster truck. Let's try it. So we there was an opportunity presented to me to go to Peru to do a 3, maybe 4 week show or whatever like that. Turned out to be a lot worse than that. But we ended up in Peru and Ecuador for about almost four months down there. That wasn't the best of times, let's say.
Gotta wonder, do you remember when and where you crushed your first car? And I gotta ask, what was that experience like crushing a car with 48 inch tires?
It was almost right behind my house. I had a huge field behind my house. My neighbor had a junk Chevrolet in his driveway. He said, yeah, man, if you want to check it out, you can run over this. I don't care. And then we'll just tow it back into my driveway and I'll tow it away. I go, hey, this is pretty cool. So I played around with it for a day or two, figured out how the van would react, and it worked great. And I talked to another friend. He brought me a couple more cars. And pretty soon I had like 3 cars to practice on for whatever time I wanted. And that's how I started on it. And for me, it was exhilarating. I put something together. I'd never seen one like it. It was working the way it should have worked. It was just a lot of fun. And I could take people with us. And being a van, it was a lot higher. Just where you sat was higher. So it would impress people. And you'd put people in the back and take them for joy rides and stuff like that. So it was just, for me, it was very entertaining. And that was the biggest thing. That was probably more important than the competition and the money and stuff. Even though the money that I did make kept it running. You know, we broke a lot and had to have a lot of things done. But for the most part, it worked out pretty well for me. And that's another reason why the 48s were good, because I could almost single-handedly put the vehicle together and take it places. I did have one really good friend that helped me out a lot when he could. Jim Cardoza was his name. But other than that, it was like a 1 or 2 man show. We did it. We were all over the place. We were 7 Western states. Like I said, South America, we went to Hawaii. We just were everywhere, and it worked out pretty well for us. Never got any really big sponsors. We got shocks and a carburetor. That was about it.
So who are your favorite people to run against in the circuit?
You know, I had a lot of fun with Mike Welsh. We ran together for quite a while from Washington through California, Nevada. We did a few shows there together, and we just had a lot of fun together. He drove the van a couple of times just playing around. I drove Super Pete, and we had a great time. And Brian Cardiff was another one, of course. I mean, once he built Hawaiian Punch, which originally was Cardiff Giant, we did a few shows together because he didn't do anything with it originally because we didn't know how to even approach people with it at that time. But that's how we kind of got started. We had a blast. We had Tim Delaney, Carter. There's a small group of people, but we were pretty tight. We had a lot of fun together.
Now, you briefly mentioned you ran with Mike Welch for a bit. Was Barbarian the only truck that you competed with in an event, or do you have other opportunities to drive other people's trucks?
I was pretty much just driving mine. I was competing with mine. I didn't. It wasn't my place to go ask somebody else if I could use theirs. After I retired, I drove one of those the ride buses for a while, the cool bus. Trying to think of who owned that one at the time. I don't recall right off the top of my head, but I drove that just to help him out a few times, but I never actually really got into another competition truck. It was like with Carpenter and Bob, I just never asked people for help or for favors, so I just pretty much did everything on my own. And that's pretty much how it remained until we retired from it all.
When you got started in the business, what were some of the early struggles that you faced?
Early struggles. Just the logistics. I was still running a machine shop full time. I would have to maybe take off on a Friday afternoon and be back by Monday mid-morning or something like that. And that was happening every other weekend there for a while. Whether it be Texas or whether it be somewhere in California or Washington, it was just you'd go, you'd set up the truck, you'd run, you maybe do a display or two, and hopefully you could get it back on the trailer if you didn't break anything too badly or whatever the case might have been. And back to my 9-to-5 job, it was just the way I did it. It was tough, but it was a lot of fun because I enjoyed the hell out of being on the road. And when it came down to my job, I enjoyed my job. So I made an effort to make sure I kept that in my bag of tricks, let's say.
So now you're one of the pioneers of the sport. Was there anyone that helped you along the way when you were getting started?
Not really. I mean, there were no sponsors. There was nobody that had another vehicle that really helped me that much. Brian was around, but he built a different animal than I had. I was in touch with Bryce a lot in Salt Lake City. He had a huge, I don't know how big that place was out there. It was right outside of Salt Lake City, but he dealt with all the military vehicles, military axles, inner axles, outer axles, transfer cases. So he helped me out a little bit on pricing and things like that, or would get me rushed a set of inner axles or something if I broke them. So he helped me a little bit too. But other than that, I pretty much did it on my own. It was a challenge.
Question here from Jason Langley, and he says, if someone wanted to recreate your van with current rules and standards, what would you think about that?
Do what? Recreate it in what way?
If someone recreated your van and modernized it to what Moss Trucks are today, what would you think about that?
Well, I think it could be done. I probably should have started doing some of those things back then, but I think it would be an honor to see something put together like that. I have another friend, Terry Whitcock. He's kind of kicking around the idea once in a while too, on maybe doing something like an old van. But I don't know if you do it upgraded or if you do it old school, because the old school thing is such a big deal now. There's bringing so many of the older vehicles back again. So, but it would be kind of neat to see what it would do, because once we started getting ramps in these shows, I mean, that started around probably 88, 89, when they started putting dirt ramps on the cars. I mean, I was flying. I could be, you know, it was unstoppable. I was twice as fast off the line as the 66 vehicles were. And it would sail pretty well. All those things were pretty cool. But then it got to the point where they're going, well, on 48s, there's not as much of a presence here. So that's what kind of got me talked into going with the 66s and the 5x. I knew I couldn't run 66s on deuce and a half. It wouldn't work. Plus, I rolled the van about a year and a half before that, so I had to put a new body on anyway. So I built another van, put the 5x on that.
So what were the differences? You mentioned you built another van. What were the differences between the first version and the second version?
The second version had a better frame. The first version would move a little bit here and there. The second version was pretty much stripped out, no interior. The roll bar went a little bit further back because of the incident I did have. Other than that, it was just because everything was heavier and bigger. So we went with different steerings. We had hydraulic on the old van, but we went with a better hydraulic system on the newer van and just beefed everything up the transfer case was different. We went with an air shift on it. So we had to carry out internal tank and those kind of things. The other one was a lot, it wasn't as much trouble, put it that way. The newer one was becoming more and more of a lot of work. But it was a labor of love as long as I was still in it. And then things happened and I got out of it. But up until then, we had a pretty good run, I think.
So we mentioned when you first crushed the car. Do you remember when you did your first pyramid?
Yeah, actually I do. We were in Reno, Nevada. We had about like four or five trucks there. The guys were saying, hey, we're going to do a pyramid here. And I'm going, what? Well, bring it. I wasn't the first vehicle, though. And I said, well, if someone else does it first, I'll go second. I don't mind going second. And then I did, and it made it over pretty well. Even with I had broken the rear tie rod on it. So we just chained it together, and I still went over the cars because I didn't want to stop, and I didn't want to not participate in it. And that was a hell of a lot of fun.
You know, you also talked about how you went down to South America. How did that all first come about?
It was a friend of one of my promoters. He had this idea that he was going to go down there and make a killing. He needed a monster truck. We had a couple of jet cars. We had a fake Knight Rider car, a couple of motorcycle guys. So we had a show we were going to put on, even though things down there were a lot worse than we thought they were before we went down. The first couple of shows were kind of fun. We were in the National Stadio in Lima, Peru. And they don't have a lot of junk cars down there. So the couple they had gotten for me, we had to stuff them full of hail bays because we had to keep using the cars over and over and over. And we did that. It was a lot of fun. And then the promoter was upset because he found out that the people that were helping him down there were ripping them off. And one thing led to another. He left. Our return flights and shipping and everything was canceled because we exceeded our time limit, which we didn't even know we had. So it was a hell of a deal to try to get back home. It took us almost 3 months to get from Lima, Peru up into Guayaquil, Ecuador. We would do little shows in a bull stadium somewhere or something like that to get a few bucks for gas and maybe food and a small place for a bunch of us to stay together. And we did that for all that time until we get up, because none of us had that kind of money sitting at home after we'd been there so much time. Like my mom was paying my truck payments. I bought a brand new crew cab dually Ford diesel to go down there with, which I never should have taken that out of the country, but I did. And things like that. And people were having to pay our bills up here. It was just a different world. I should have written a book about that whole adventure. We were shot at a couple of times. There was martial law when we first went down there, but we got to meet a different type of people. One of our perks when we were first there, we had a couple more weeks till our vehicles got there. The promoter had taken us to Machu Picchu. So we did that whole thing, which was really cool. I'm glad I got to experience that, but all the other experiences were not what I'd recommend anybody do, especially just being the few of us that there were. We didn't have a lot of protection, and none of us spoke Peruvian, which is pretty much Spanish. We just picked up words here and there to eat, and that's how we existed. It was pretty weird.
Who were some of the people you went down there with to South America?
Casey Jones, he had a jet dragster. He was there. Mike Brown, he was a motocross champ. He had done it all over Europe and the United States, and he was known for doing the stopping on the front tire things and the wheelies and all that kind of stuff. He was pretty well known. A couple other guys, we had a guy with it. Would drive an old Datsun pickup truck on two wheels all the way around the stadium, things like that. Some of the other people that had gone down there with us, I don't remember all the names. It's just been so long ago.
So I heard you mention Terry Woodcock earlier. We actually had Terry on a while back on the podcast, as many of you guys know. Do you have any fun Terry Woodcock story?
I only met him a couple times when he was first running the Cyclops truck. I'm trying to think of what year I met him. Probably 86. And I saw him at a few shows back then. And we didn't, we, you know, we had our cordials. We said, hello, how are you doing? Nice truck, that kind of stuff. We didn't hang out that much together other than that. That's how I know him. Just like a lot of the other guys, like Gary Schott, he was another one I met and hung out with for a while. I had a couple of shows. In fact, he did a couple of shows when I was in South America for Steve Curfield. So when I came back, that's how I met him. And Olaker, I finally got to meet him. I had found out that he had built a van too called Rolling Thunder. And I'm going, wow. So I did some investigation on it. And I think we finally saw each other at a SEMA show or something, right at the very beginning of all this. And then after that, he was on his deal and I was doing my deal. So we didn't really see each other too much after that.
Did you have any rivals when you were involved in the industry?
You know, there was only because of the tire difference, there wasn't anybody else on the West Coast running 48s. I mean, so I was pretty much, I was it. I mean, if I went somewhere, it was hard to compete with some of the other trucks, but I held my own. There were a lot of times when a lot back then it was the audience appeal, and I would get great response from the crowds and all that. I ran with AMPM Boss, did a couple shows with them, and I had a couple shows with Bigfoot and some other people, and I got just as much of a hey, how you doing type response than they did. So I felt like I was part of that whole family, and it worked out pretty well. I think in the end, I didn't really have a big rival with anyone. Like Mike and I were doing a lot of shows together, but we weren't as much competing against each other as just trying to put on a great show. And we did that. We succeeded in doing that quite often.
So my buddy Brian Anger, thank you, Levi, wanted to know, you know, you mentioned Jim Oldaker with his Rolling Thunder van, and there were a few other vans that popped up later on. Yeah. Did you ever get your van mistaken to be associated with Jim's van or any of the other vans?
No, mine was too unique. Nobody was going to compare mine to theirs. Another one was Lead Butterfly. I did a couple shows with him. That was a Ford that had the tilt front end and the back came up. There was Rolling Thunder. There was one other band. I don't remember who it was, but they were so much different than mine. It was never a confusion in that respect. And then when I changed the colors of the van, a lot of people really like the new colors more than the old, but there's still a lot of old school people that said, hey, why'd you ever get rid of the gray paint, go to the white? I had an opportunity to have a really good paint shop, paint it the way I wanted it. Everything on that truck was pearl. It was highlighted in pearl, even the white and the stripes on the sides were all done in candies and pearls and all. And I thought, wow, what a nice, you know, paint job for something that could get thrashed. And occasionally it got close.
A great question here once again from Jason. He says, but been attending events since 88 Virginia and North Carolina. Did you attend any events on the East Coast?
I attended one in Florida only because I was stuck there waiting for my van to get out of quarantine. When it came back, I went to one show, saw a couple of people. Nobody recognized me. And that was the only time I had been back east to see a show. And then there was a couple people that I had met in Texas. We did a couple shows there where people from back east were gravitating towards the West Coast. And of course, Gravedigger and Bigfoot and there was different drivers that I had met through the years. In fact, one time Dennis Anderson did a show in San Jose where I was living then. His kids were about the same age as my son, and they were all hanging out in his camper half of the weekend, just eating hot dogs and running around, and they're all, you know, maybe 10, 12 years old. That was all the older they were at that time. That's mid-80s, so. And now look at all of them. My son does rock crawling and stuff like that. He never got into the monster truck. He wanted to, but he's just going a different avenue, so he's having a lot of fun, and then that was it. Then I have a daughter, too, but she's not into the motorsports.
So at the time, if you didn't have the choice of, you know, doing the monster truck route, you know, would you stick to the motorsports industry or go somewhere else?
Mostly the motorsport industry. A lot of truck pulls, a lot of monster truck shows where we did displays here and there and competed. I was in LA, I don't know how many times, that whole area down there. I did a few shows. I was showing the van for a while, for about 3 or 4 months in the early spring, maybe late winter, when the car shows were going around, because I already had that kind of experience with I had a 67 GMC van that was all tricked out, custom paint, bodywork, full interior. And I would show that on a regular basis. So when I got into the monster truck thing and we had maybe some time off in the winter or whatever, I would show that truck. And not as often as we ran, though. We ran a lot more.
Got a comment here. You may know who this guy is. It's Tim Delaney. He says, looking good, buddy.
Yeah, he's one of my brothers from another mother, let's say. He spent quite a bit of time on the road with me when he was running Punch and I was running the Barbarian. We did shows in Arizona, California. He went up north and I went somewhere else a couple of times, but we'd bump into each other again. We did a marathon show. I don't remember what year it was. Arco Arena in Sacramento had just opened up. So they wanted us to do a show. It was myself and Tim. And at the same weekend, I had accepted a job in Santa Maria, which is down by Pismo Beach. It's hard to explain exactly where it was, but it's almost central to the southern coast of California. And we did the first night, back and forth was okay. The second night, it didn't work out so well. I blew two tires and an axle on my trailer and never made the second night in Sacramento. I felt bad about that. So he did it on his own. But then the next time he came back down to Santa Maria, he goes, oh, I'm gonna have a little bit of fun with Bruce. And that van, he had left me Rambler station wagons to run over. And that was the first time I rolled it, getting over those things. And it just went cattywampus. And next thing I knew, I was on my side. He thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah, sure. Sounds like a fun time. Do you have any more good Tim Delaney stories you could share with us? Sounds like you have a lot.
I ran in the A Stadium in LA one year. We were doing there was a couple of times. One was pretty good. Another time was it was a competition course, and it made around the first couple of corners. Everything was going great. Hopped up on a 6 or 8 car run. Beautiful, came over them, and right as at the last one, I heard a pop, and I'm going, what the hell was that? And I looked underneath, and the drive shafts were turning, but I couldn't stop the vehicle, and it wouldn't move. Come to find out, we broke all 4 axles that night on that car. So that was kind of disappointing. I had to cut that show short. And then one other time we were down there, SRO show, I believe it was. We came off of the starting gate and I mistakenly hit the wrong side of a cone after I came over the first set of cars. So I had to back up and go around. Well, in that time I was losing the run. So I get all the way around the whole course, get everything the way I was supposed to do. The last set of cars, I was in a hurry or whatever, and I hit it a little bit too hard, stood the truck straight up in the air, came back down, popped the rear steering on it and still made it off the cars and to the finish line. And I don't think that many people knew that I broke the truck, but it was pretty cool. It was fun.
Make sure you guys keep those questions coming and make sure you like and share this video so everybody can hear Bruce's story here tonight. Another question from Jason Langley. He says, did you sled pull with the van?
Did I what?
Did you sled pull with the van?
Yes, I did. Yeah. I did that in, I think it was in Arizona somewhere. We did an army base down there. They had no cars. So what are you going to do? Just go. And I was really, really known for doing donuts, I think. Everybody thought that I had kind of started that whole thing. Before everybody else was doing donuts, I was out there going crazy, forward, reverse, smoking the tires on it and everything. And you can only do that so long, so you had to do something else. I go, well, you know, you guys got truck pulls here, blah, 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 whatever. I'll pull the sled. So we pulled it that time. And I used to do mud bogs too in it. Blew up a motor one time doing bogs. I was in the nitrous a little bit too heavy. The truck started slowing down. We just kept giving it more nitrous. And all of a sudden, pop, flames coming out all over the place. It was a night show too. So that was good. Good for the photographers.
Sounds like it was awesome. But what were some of your favorite places to run back then?
Probably it was nice to be closer to home, but Salt Lake City was kind of a cool show. It was a long drive, but it was kind of fun to go somewhere like that because I didn't know what it was going to be like. And it was a fun show. LA was always fun. And so is Palm Springs. We ran Palm Springs. We started doing it, I think, once or twice a year. We would go down there. And that was a lot of fun, too. The people down there really appreciated it. And then we had some pretty good shows down in Arizona. We used to like going down there. It's just a lot of driving over a matter of a couple of days.
As my cat enters the frame here, do you remember competing in Angels Stadium over in Anaheim? We had some of those clips in our highlight video. Do you have any memories from competing in Anaheim?
Yeah, that was one of the places that I had that incident I told you about.
There you go.
I don't know which clip you have, but I think it's the one where I stood the truck up. Everybody liked that, but it was, unfortunately, I lost the race. So it wasn't the glee I got from that wasn't, it was pretty short-lived, let's put it that way.
Another part of that clip, you were racing so high too, and you hit the car stack and you bounced right back.
That's great, yeah. So high too. That was a hell of a truck too. I think somebody rebuilt that one too, if I'm not mistaken. I think somebody did.
Yeah, so high too. It's floating around at somewhere. I think last was in Costa Rica. Last we heard, I'm good friends with his nephew.
Oh, really?
So I'm sure we'll have David on here in the future.
Yeah, he had a pretty nice shop. I think he's out of, Scottsdale?
Queen Creek. Yeah, well, he probably was in Scottsdale back in that time, too.
Yeah, it was pretty early. We're talking old school here.
Old school, indeed. Is there any particular place you wish you would have taken Barbarian? Anything that sticks out of mind you wish you could have competed in or been part of some sort of event with the truck?
You know what? I enjoyed everywhere I went. I wish that the weather had been better when I was in Hawaii. We had a miserable time there. It ended up, it was a two-day show, and it rained so bad over there. The Aloha Stadium was nothing but a big mud pit. And it ended up that Mike Welsh and I, we did what we could do. We kept the show going. We kept the momentum going. But it was just it was just miserable. And I wish I would have done a show there where the weather was nice, because I really enjoyed that whole experience over there. The people were so friendly. And because it was so crappy for me, it took me an extra day to get my truck clean enough to be accepted back into the States, because we had done the mud and other guys weren't going to go there and do it because they didn't want to spend that time cleaning them. But I would like to have gone there again. I like that.
We have a question here from Mark Werner, and he says, by chance, any memories of working for Dave Matthews?
Yes, I do. Yes, Dave Matthews. Yeah, we did a lot of the Valley shows, like Turlock and that area. And he was right around the same time they had met Steve Kurzweil. So he was kind of like a local guy, but he did do a couple of shows in San Francisco. I'm trying to think of Oakland, maybe. I'm not sure if he ever did any shows in San Jose that I ran for him, but we did a few of the Valley shows. He was a nice guy, great guy.
You might know who this is. It's Lonnie Sorcy, and he says, the floorboard of the semi-truck was my bed for a while. I love those times with the Barbarian. Great dad.
Yes, my son, Lonnie. We had a run. We had to run up to Oregon or Washington for like 2 or 3 weeks in a row. And I was doing things back here in California, and I had to get back, and I had borrowed a guy's semi-truck to do it. So we would go up there, run the show on the weekend, hop in the truck, come back home, and then go back up the next weekend. And he was pretty young. I'm trying to think of about how old he was at the time, but he was young enough to fit in that floorboard. And that was he still remembers that today. And it was pretty exciting. At times, you know, when you're that young, you think about things like that, and you go, man, I don't know how we made it through all that kind of stuff. But now it's kind of cool. Sit back and laugh about it and have a beer together and say, hey, remember this? And that was one of those more enjoyable things for him. I'm glad I took him.
When you went over to Hawaii, who was the promoter for those events, and how was that experience?
Oh, man, I'm trying to think if that was SRO or maybe in conjunction with Matthews. I'm not sure who did that one back then. That was back in, I think, 86 or 87 I went. So I'm not so sure of who was doing it at the time. It was like there was like four trucks there. I think Mike Walsh had two. It was me, Bigfoot, which was Andy Brass. He was driving that. And I think there was another vehicle, but I don't remember who it was now. Been a long time. And I don't have any film or pictures from that either. I used to have a lot of film and pictures of my truck and all these people that I raced with and hung out. And then my home got broken into in the 90s, and all that stuff disappeared. I was in about six or seven magazines. I had copies of those. I have those in storage still. But all the film, except for one DVD that I have, all that other stuff's gone now. So I don't have any of it. If other people have it, it'd be cool to see it, but I don't know what else is out there. There's a lot. We did a lot of shows, so there should be a lot of film somewhere on it.
Shout out to the people in the comments. We got Jason Rivas here. He says, got to be John Borba, you in Hawaii for years. And Todd Blazer said the same thing. Does that sound correct?
Yeah. Yeah, we did a couple of years with them. I don't know how many years exactly. And then there was a whole group of guys that we used to run mud bogs and everything with out of Bakersfield. That's where Woodcock came from, and a lot of the guys down there that ran monster trucks. I'm trying to think of their names, and now you caught me off guard because I can't remember their names. But anyway, we used to go down there on and off. Bill Oliver had a truck, and there's just a whole group of really good guys down there. They weren't really into the monster truck thing, but they sure loved mudding and truck pulls, and they're just a great bunch of people to be around.
Good to see you in the comments, Todd. I'm sure we'll be talking to you down the line as well. Hey, another one of our past guests is Steve Curcio. You mentioned him a little bit earlier. Do you have any fun Steve Curcio memories or stories you'd like to share?
That SOB? No. he was great. We got along great. I mean, he was always the greatest guy for me. I mean, he would, if I needed more time to get somewhere or needed a couple bucks, he was there to give it to me, even though, he's a promoter. You got to remember that about Steve Curcio. But he was great. He stuck with me, and I stuck with him, and I ended up actually selling my van to him when I retired. And his brother Rick took it over, and they ran it for quite a long time, and they were really happy with it. They didn't really have to replace very much after they purchased the vehicle. They had to change the name because they had copyrighted that. They changed a few things. They couldn't use the paint. Other than that, they did what they wanted to with it. And Rick told me that for years they had a great vehicle on their hands, and they really relied on that to be a good vehicle, because they didn't have the money to start rebuilding vehicles every month or every other week or whatever it might have been. So those guys were really good to me. I'll never forget those guys. They were pretty cool.
So I'm assuming the van turned into the fire monster, and I believe now it's Redneck Road Trip. Is that correct?
Somebody told me it was that Redneck Road Trip thing, but I don't know, because the last I heard, it was a ride truck, but then that Redneck truck is a totally different body. I don't know if it's the same frame or not, because I haven't seen the frame pictures. I would know if I saw them, but I'm not sure if that's the same one. But I heard the rumor is that, yeah, that was it. So I don't know.
I think that's the correct rumor, too. We've heard the same information. And those that don't know, Redneck Road Trip is ran by Jimmy Creed now, with the Bounty Hunter and Scarlet Bandit and those trucks.
Yeah, Creed, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But when you did sell the truck to the Curcios, what was the decision to sell the truck?
I had lost my Class 1 license. I had a medical issue, and then I couldn't haul it anymore personally. I would have to pay for somebody to take it everywhere, and I just couldn't afford it. We weren't making enough money with the van to support a two- or three-person team. I just couldn't do it. Between hotels and then buying a new truck, a semi-truck for it, it just wasn't in the cards for me. My kids were going to school at that point, and I said, you know what, we had a pretty good run, and I don't want to just let it go to waste. Steve needed a truck, really liked it. He knew he could do things with it. We made a deal on it, and that's where it went. I miss it, but hey, that's sometimes you're dealt with the cards you're given.
And if that is still the same truck, it's had a very healthy life, doing a lot of different things. And your son also mentioned a random name, Why Not, for a period of time before being sold to Rod Schmidt. So if that is the same truck, it's still seeing some action and still entertaining fans.
And you know what I was really proud of? Even up until the mid-90s, they were still running that same motor in it with the 5 tons. That's pretty impressive. I was pretty happy with that happening like that. So, hey, something worked out pretty good.
Got another comment from Mike Menner from the Warhead Mini Monster team. He says, Gary Schott, ? I'm sure you'd like to know, do you have any Gary Schott stories?
The only one I can think of that was kind of funny, I mean, it's been filmed, so it's not a secret or anything like that, is when he took it to Palm Springs and he snapped the truck in half. Because he had done the same thing. He stuck with the first truck that he built. He stuck with the stock frame, I believe. I don't know how much he did to try to reinforce it. But he went and hit a Cadillac. It didn't go all the way over, backed up, and went to hit it again. It wasn't quite the way he wanted it to back up. When he hit it the second or third time, the nose of the truck comes up onto the cars, and it just keeled over. And then the bed of it is still down here. And there's a guy on the out behind us somewhere, or where it was being filmed, and they're going, "Sparks!" And we've all got break stories like that, but that was pretty funny. So that's the only one, the comical one I can think of with Gary.
So did you ever think about building another monster truck, whether it be another Barbarian or something more modern? Is that something that ever crossed your mind throughout the 90s or even today?
You know, it would be nice to think about it, but I'm winding down, so to speak. I'm just retired now. I'm relaxing and taking care of other things, and it's just not in the cards for me to go about trying to build another vehicle right now. It would be fun, but or maybe to oversee someone else doing one, but I couldn't do it. Just too much time's gone by, and things have gotten so high tech. And I understand that it'd be great to do it, but if you're going to build a new vehicle these days, it has to be high tech, and that all costs money.
Do you still follow the current monster truck scene? You still go out to the events? And if so, what are your thoughts on monster trucks currently in 2020?
I wish I knew then what I know now. As far as just the axle combinations, the drop boxes, the way you can reinforce axles and everything's where they're a little bit more bulletproof than they used to be, and the style of axle, you know, that's all changed. Everything that we use, it was just the then technology. It can't hold a candle to what's out there now. I mean, you see these trucks in some of these competitions now, and they do things that we never dreamt of doing because of the technology in those vehicles, from the motors right down to the tires now. BKT got into the act, and just so many things, and it's fun to watch, but where's it going to go from here? I don't know. I think they've got them locked in pretty well right now. The technology's there. Now it's just build a truck that'll hold up and have fun.
Got another question from Mark Warner. I know we talked about tires a bit at the beginning of the episode, but what brought on the change from the 48s to the larger tires?
Well, the one of the reasons was I was getting less shows because people said, hey, you know, they've seen the van and it's cool and everything, but everybody's going bigger, better, blah, blah, blah. And I kept thinking about that. And I guess at some point I figured, well, you know what, maybe now is the time to try to do this. And I talked to a couple of people on what I could get as far as the equipment. It was affordable at the time. I had some downtime on the van. I go, you know what? Let's go for it. Let's see what happens. And so I made that choice. I mean, it could have worked out really well if I would have kept the truck and done a few more modifications that I had in mind and kept it running. And it unfortunately, it didn't happen. So that's the way things go once in a while. But my foresight was to have the 5 tons on it, 66s, go to Planetaries and do the things that the other guys were doing at the time, different suspension system, and it would have done very well because it's always a great-looking vehicle. People accepted it well, and I just figured I had to go up a notch like so many people do. And you weren't going to go that far in the 48s because that was considered, you know, not the right direction to go.
I'm going to transfer over to one of the fan favorite segments. For those listening on the podcast feeds, it's time for Explain That Photo. Bruce, the rules are simple. We're going to bring a photo up on the screen, and all you got to do is explain that photo. Here we go. Here's the first photo. Okay.
That was one of the Bakersfield runs that we did. That was with the old paint job on it. That was a hell of a lot of fun down there. There was a guy called Bill Oliver. He had Unnamed Untamed. It was a mid-40s Hemi Dodge. And that thing would kick butt, especially on the mud bogs. And it did for a long time until he finally sold it to Sturgis to someone who made a monster truck out of it. But we had a ball down there doing these mud bogs. And the van would make it through. It was okay. Just a lot of cleaning to do afterwards.
We got another photo up on the screen for you. Here it is.
That was, that's Pismo Beach, I believe. Yeah. They told me I couldn't run the van out there because I had open headers. So we went into a parts store somewhere around there, bought a couple of cherry bomb mufflers, bolted them on there, and they let me go anywhere I wanted to on Pismo Beach. And we had a blast out there. I believe that was Pismo Beach there.
Phil, you got another picture for us?
Bring up the next picture.
I don't remember where that was, but you see the condition that car is in, don't you?
Oh, yeah. You're dragging it along.
And that wasn't the only time that happened. It happened a couple of times, and I was always able to get – if I didn't have lockers in that vehicle, it probably would have gotten hung up. But I had Detroit lockers front and rear on it, and it worked pretty well. It did what it was supposed to do. That was fun. It was fun to get it in predicaments like that, and people were going, oh – you're not going to make it out of there, or whatever the case might have been. But that was another one. But that was later on, too, because it has the tube bumper on it. It doesn't have the chrome bumper on it. So that was later on, right around the time I was changing bodies on it.
We have one more photo for you. I think we talked about this guy a little bit earlier.
Tim. My brother, Tim Delaney. That's San Francisco. We're out hanging out for a weekend, or he was going to a game or something. I was around, so I came up and hung up with him, and it's like, I don't see her there, but she's in there somewhere. Lori, are you there, Lori? I don't know. She might have been. Another cool thing that I had done, I had a friend in the area that I was working as a machinist. And they came out with a new product called Cat Eyes. And they asked me, hey, would you like to maybe set up your van with it? Because you're doing all these shows and whatever, we can help you do it. What it was all the KCs on the top of that van could steer. I had a steering wheel inside right by the sunroof. By the way, it had a sunroof. But anyway, there's a steering wheel in there, and I could steer all those Cat Eyes from one side to the other, like I was doing a parade or at a show or whatever beforehand. So they would all steer, and that was pretty cool. It was pretty impressive just to make it more unique, the whole vehicle and everything that we did with it.
Well, you've made a lot of fun. Look at that. Somebody's here. It's Hawaii Futures, Tim Delaney.
Hi, Mr. Tim. What are you doing? Hey.
Hello. Well, I told you that, but I've been making notes. And before we get started, we wanted to talk about your first pyramid car crush in Reno. I actually have the original promoter right here.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, how are you?
The original promoter from that show right there, and that's your girlfriend, Lori. Yeah, you know.
My goodness.
Love you, babe.
I've been many, many moons. Yeah,
we had a car show tonight, but go ahead.
So we had I forget how many trucks. We had that Orange Crush truck from Canada. We had we had the punch truck there.
Yeah.
We had a Bigfoot.
And we had Steve Helm. Hey,
was that around the time you guys tried to take a swimming? That was in Reno too.
Yeah.
Let's not remind me of that one. Okay.
Don't. Yeah. When you stayed at her house, that was funny. No, I've been making notes. I did kind of fool you today when I said I couldn't make this, but you know, Vince and Phil, they're great guys. And yeah, so the pyramid thing we took care of, you know, Lori standing right here, that was the original promoter. And yeah. I never, ever left you station wagons. That was Dewey. I never did that.
I think it might have been you.
I didn't do that. I called you from Red Bluff or somewhere, and I apologize for Dewey leaving you the station wagons. So that's all I want to clear up.
Okay. And,
okay. So I got that one done.
We can talk about it now.
Phil, Vincent, I think if we had like 4 hours and like a novel, Bruce and I could write. Bruce was great with his trailer. He had these mobile home axles on it. And I can tell you what, within 75 miles, we're traveling. He goes, hey, in about 50 miles, I'm going to lose a tire. And I'm like, the first time he said that, it was like 1985, 86, I don't remember. I said, whatever. 85 miles, here we go. Boom, blows a tire. So he knew when that was going to happen. Okay, so I got that one. Palm Springs. You and I got kicked out of there when we did that photo shoot for Brian Nato or Moto, whatever his name was, with that magazine. When we were up there with they had some kind of a plant that was endangered, and Bruce and I were up the hill, and
yeah.
Brian Cardiff, we don't know who he was. And then Arco Arena. Yeah, well, I remember that night. That was a fun time. And then all Lori wanted to tell you, Bruce, is she loves you and she's got a baseball bat for you.
The same one.
She's you know. Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's the same one, but I really don't want to go into that story.
You talk about the Palm Springs that photo shoot was messed up because those cops got called because they said we never had permission to use Palm Springs in the background of our photo shoot because we had a professional magazine shooting it. And then when we rubbed elbows with the cops and offered rides and stuff to the vehicles, then that's when they walked away from us. But that was a fun time down there.
Yeah, I was called a pit kid down there. Yeah, I remember that. Four Wheeler Magazine was there. I can't remember. I was a pit kid.
Yeah.
I remember that. The only other thing, you guys, everybody that's tuning in, Bruce and I have been friends since probably 84. We started in Bakersfield. Bruce, that was my old Dodge next to your van in that picture. I don't know if you remember the Dodge. But, you know, that's it right there. That's my old Dodge. And that was Bakersfield. And Bruce would always comment about the U-joints on my Dodge because they were almost as big as the 2.5 tons on the Rockwell.
Yeah.
And
hey, I have to be honest. I had to put my glasses on to see it.
No, I know. I remember that. But I was a lot younger then, and I didn't know you guys were so old when I was doing it. Because if I would have known that, my mom would have let me go out. And speaking of my mom, you guys, Vince and Phil, my mom loved Bruce. And I think I sent you a picture of my wedding. I think you could pop that up. And we rented the tuxes for the wedding for Bruce and Brian Cardiff. And when the time came up for Bruce to leave, my mom went out on the dance floor and she said, Bruce, I need your tux when you get done. And Bruce did a striptease on the dance floor for my mom.
I was dancing with your mother.
A few years ago, my mom passed in 15. Yeah, we were cowboy boots and boxers, and that was it. And about... I don't remember, 8-9 years ago, my mom was going through dementia down in Corvus, California, and she knew who I was, but I said, you know what? I told my sister I'm gonna bring Bruce with me. And so we went in, and mom says, oh, Timmy, you know, I love you, blah, blah, blah. And I said, hey, because you couldn't remember people.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, this will jog her memory. If she doesn't know who Bruce is, we're in big trouble. So I said, I brought a friend of mine with me. And she goes, well, who is it? And Bruce come through the door, and she goes, oh, that's my Brucey.
That's sweet, my Bruce. Sweet woman.
Bruce is a wonderful guy. You'll never find – there it is. There it is.
Look at that handsome group.
I don't know what my hair is doing, but
– I've never seen
– And then Brian Cardiff is – he's down there by the plants. There he is.
And look at all the
anyway, I had something going. Anyway, you'll never find a better man than Bruce. I know a lot of Monster Truck people. We did a lot of shows. We could write 2 or 3 books. He's the kind of guy that showed up in Chandler, Arizona, when we did a show down there for Dave Matthews. I had a guy with me named Lock Dinger, and I told him not to jack all the way to the top, and it locked. And it was raining about 3 inches every 20 minutes. And Bruce had already left with Jimmy. And then I had to go steal a forklift and lift the truck up off the jack. And all of a sudden I looked around, and here came Bruce. And I'd still be there. It wasn't.
And you guys had those fire suits.
I love you.
Those things were heavier than heck.
Yeah, I love. Oh, remember when we drove the van over to the Circle K to get beer? And it was legal in Arizona. Yeah. All right, I'll shut up.
We had some good times.
Way too many good times.
Hey.
Way too many.
I love you, man.
I love you, too. You're always my buddy. And I miss you in Reno, and so does Lori. When you show up and you just kind of knock on the door and Lori comes to the door, you know that story.
Yeah,
anyway.
We know the scenario. Okay.
You're always welcome in Reno, my brother.
The next pub crawl I go to, I'll come up there and check it out.
You know, I had the race shop all set up. I brought the Buick up. I got the desert truck in there. I got a 48 Olds. I got a 49 Chevy, classic cars in there, and I couldn't get the Wi-Fi to work. So, you know, he's gonna have to trust that we were gonna be in the shop, and we can't do it. The Wi-Fi, we'll be calling Spectrum on Monday.
And you're staying pretty busy, yes, Tim? You got your little projects?
Oh yeah, I've got my projects, and that'll be coming out soon for Vincent and Phil, and you already know, and Terry knows, and those guys, and we all know that. So we're going to do some stuff, and we're going to have a great time. But you guys picked the creme of the creme. Like I said, you can't find it any better than Bruce Gault, an innovator, guy that did it with 48s. You can't. You know, we always – Gary Schott and I and Bruce would draw straws or draw numbers, and Bruce would – he'd draw number one every once in a while, and I'd ask him, I said, you want me to take it? He goes, no, I'll do it. And most of the time I took his number and went. Gary Schott always had to come out last because he had to do his donuts. But I never wanted Bruce to go over first over the solid sidecars. It's just a lot of work for 48s, but Bruce did it all day long. He did it against Bigfoot. He did it against Barefoot. I watched him do it against everybody at the LA Coliseum, the Oakland Coliseum.
Yeah.
He never shied from anything. And if there's anybody, I think it was one van you were talking about. It was Lead Butterfly, Bruce, I think was the other one. We did shows with Lead Butterfly and Red Bluff. And that thing weighed like 50,000 pounds. I don't remember how much that thing weighed, but it was huge. But you can't take away from the fact that Bruce did this with 48s and nobody else was doing it. So nobody on the West Coast or even the East Coast with 48s. So Bruce was an innovator doing this and never shied from going sideways over cars. I watched him launch a set of cars in Sacramento sideways. I thought he was nuts, but hey, that's Bruce. So, but anyway.
And you are correct.
Bruce. No, I am correct. I remember that to this day.
See, you're not getting that old. You're not there yet. Well, thank you, Tim.
I'm not as cool as Bruce, but I'm working.
Thank you for the kind words. Huh?
Thank you. Yeah. Lori loves you. We love you. And we look forward to seeing you. I'm glad I could pop in. But we miss you, and we hope to see you soon. And Vince and Bill, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it. And Lori wants to say bye.
Bye,
you guys are doing a wonderful job. Appreciate it. We love watching the show. It's fabulous. We're having a great time watching.
Thank you, guys.
It's really kind of cool. It's really fascinating to see.
That's the original promoter where Bruce did a
Bruce's first pyramid.
Oh, you're right.
She's not that old.
Come on, Vince.
No, I already love you.
Love you
too.
Thanks, Phil. Vincent, thank you.
Thank you, Ted. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, well,
I love Tim Delaney, and don't worry, guys. We're going to do a solo episode with Tim in the near future, but we always appreciate having Tim jump on and especially surprise you, Bruce. Say, well, I got to ask, I mean, when was the first time you met Tim? I know you guys are great friends, but do you remember the first time you met Tim?
That you have those pictures of. That was the very first time.
Yeah,
and he had his truck, and then he was doing something with a Toyota truck down there too, and then some time had passed by, and Brian was looking for another driver for the punch truck, because I believe what's his name, he had just mentioned Dewey had been running the Cardiff Giant, which was the punch truck in its infancy, and then I don't know if it was exactly when the truck got transferred over to the Hawaiian Punch or not. But that's when Tim got into the picture, and then we were doing a lot of shows together, obviously. We were even in magazines together, more than one, I think. And then that's how we hooked up again and started hanging out together. Well, what else are you going to do?
Yeah, that should be the late Dewey Middle Camp you're probably running
Dewey Middle with. Camp, that's correct. Yeah.
Well, we had another comment.
A lot of times Brian didn't want to drive the truck, or he didn't have time or whatever. So he was always looking for drivers and people, because he would ride with us sometimes, but he was not a gypsy like us, I guess. We have more gypsy blood in us than Brian does, but he was a hell of a guy. He has a hell of a brain, come up with some really good ideas and sponsorships and things that really made it work for him. It was fun.
And during that back and forth, one of our past guests popped in. It was Gary Schott, and he said had lots of fun shows with Bruce.
Yeah, we managed to have fun, you know. And there wasn't a lot of animosity. There wasn't, or I'm gonna beat your butt tonight and tomorrow night and the next night. It wasn't that kind of a deal. We were out having fun, trying not to break anything, and if it happened, okay, that's okay. So we enjoyed each other's company and enjoyed being out there. Like I said. Earlier, I just, for whatever reason, I liked making people happy. They come out there for a couple hours on a Friday night or a Saturday or a Sunday, forget about everything else, just watch us. Whether we make an ass out of ourselves or not, or do the best thing that could be imagined, we took them away from everything and we made them enjoy life for a little bit at our expense, and that's okay. I enjoyed it, and those guys did too. All those guys did. And the guys that are doing it now do it for the same reasons. Not everybody's out there, you know, just to make big bucks, because there's not a lot of big bucks anymore like it used to be. Now, if you can sell novelties, T-shirts, merch, then you're going to make a few bucks. But just going to a show isn't like it used to be. So that's a big deal.
So what was your mission when you went to a show, you know, traveling across the country? What was your mission with Monster Trucks?
I'm sorry?
We lost his connection a bit. He was asking, you know, do you have a mission when you went to an event with your truck? Like, was there a game plan, a set goal for when you're out there at an event?
there used to be a certain show. It depends on where the shows were. We would kind of like have a plan. This is what we're going to do first or not. And then if that all works well, then we're going to get into plan B. But for the most part, it was never the same, especially for me with the 48s. The cars always made a big difference to me. Some of them were a real challenge. Other ones were easy. If I went first, it was different than when I went second. You know, it's the difference between going 5 miles an hour at something and going 20. You know, it all depended. Like I said, especially even with the ramp thing. Nowadays, everybody's doing basically the same thing because everything has ramps. Now it's just speed and air. Back then, if you caught air, you were doing something pretty cool. And so we couldn't make plans as the way you're thinking about plans. We're just planning on, hey, can I get over that car, get it down enough to where I can make a better run the next time, that sort of thing. And how long do I show off in between running over cars, doing donuts or doing whatever else it might be, just parading around. You know, it all varied. The crowd would change, you know, your attitude towards what you were doing. So there wasn't a set plan, no. But it was, you always had to be thinking about it in my case. So it was okay. Most of the time it worked out.
So we have another comment here from your son, Lonnie. He says, losing tires off the trailer on the freeway happened a couple times.
Somebody didn't tie one down one time. About 10:30 in the morning and at night, we were leaving the Bay Area and we're going down the freeway. And all of a sudden, I don't know. I think somebody was following us to a show somewhere and he started flashing his lights or whatever, and oh my God, pull over. One of the tires had popped off the trailer and went all the way down an embankment. And luckily I had like a 300-pound beast with me. It was a friend of mine. He was able, between me and another guy and this guy, get that tire back up up on the road and get it back on the trailer. But that was pretty frightening. Another time a car hit me on an overpass. And he hit me in just such a way that he knocked off two of the tires off the trailer. He had hit the chain, and for whatever reason, it popped off, or the tires popped off, and he ran. I mean, he took off. The cop showed up. He had to stop traffic so I could get the tires back out of there. And I said, well, you know, I only need a little bit of help. I can probably get him over the side of the road if you help me. He goes, no, no, no. The CHP officer goes, no, I got a bad back. I can't help you. So I had to wrestle those things out of there by myself. It was fun. But things like that do happen. Luckily, no one ever got hurt, and we made it through.
So another, when Tim was just on here, you talk about a story. You guys are in Arizona, and you drove the truck to Circle K to get some beverages. I can't imagine that happening these days.
We drove up to I don't know if that one had the drive-up window or not, because we did do another, I forgot what town we were in. They had a drive-up window. We drove up to the window with the van. They go, yeah, you know, made whatever order. They're going, well, how are you going to get it? So so I hung out of the truck like that, grabbed the package, and brought it back in. But we would get away with it once in a while. We'd try. We were able to drive the van almost the whole time in South America with the tires on it. And we'd go to the gas station and go wherever we wanted, because they had their fuel down there is like 104 octane or whatever. So that was what we were running anyway. We were running ad fuel. And they never stopped us, never questioned what we were doing, because they'd never seen anything like that before. So that was kind of fun. We got to drive it quite a bit on the streets sometimes.
So as we continue to keep going, as we slowly wind down, is there anything that you miss from the monster truck scene that you wish you still kind of had going on day to day?
I guess I miss the hustle and bustle of the trade. I mean, I miss it. I miss being on the road. I miss the people. I miss the hardships, you know, and the smell of the alcohol or the fuel or the oil or whatever it is, you know, because once you get away from it, those senses aren't there anymore, no matter what you do. Even if you stay with motorsports, it's not the same as monster trucking. It just isn't. There's too many other things involved. So I do miss that part of it. It was a lot of fun.
Is there one big moment in your career that you always go back to look back on, like one big show you had or moment?
You know, in a smaller venue, the one that I really, really enjoyed was Red Bluff. We were there for 3 days. We ran the first night, everything was great. And then it started snowing and snowing and snowing. Next morning we get up, there's an inch and a half on the ground. It was starting to melt by the time show came around, but it was just one big mud pit. But for some reason, the van was running so well in that mud over those cars. It was just an incredible show for me. There was nothing I couldn't do. I'd stand it up frontwards. I'd stand it up backwards. And at that time, I was playing around with paint schemes, and I painted my drive shafts candy canes, you know, those type of colors on it. And, you know, of course, it was right there in full view of everyone. And it was just, that was a really good show. I really liked that up there. We had a great time. And that was with that Lead Butterfly. That was with Tim, with Mike Welsh had two or three vehicles, and he had his fire truck. Did you guys ever see the fire truck he had with the really big tires on it, the 80-inch tires?
Yeah, I think that was the Flying Falcon.
Yeah. I don't know if it's Falcon or Flying something.
Yeah.
But, and the body would lift up on it on hydraulics?
Yes.
So he and I would ride around in that thing, you know, just playing around. And we just had a really, really good weekend. It was I didn't break the truck, and I did everything I wanted to do. And it was a big mud mess, but it was a fun show to do. And it was just everything worked right. It was a little bit cold, but you get used to that, and the excitement of being there and the adrenaline. I've done a lot of shows where the adrenaline takes over, and it's really fun. And you do what you do, and you get through the evenings. But that, for some reason, I keep thinking about that Red Bluff show, and that was a lot of fun. It was miserable conditions, but the show went well.
I ask this question every episode. We've had a lot of diverse answers, various answers to this question. I'm curious to see what advice you have to give for somebody wanting to get involved with the industry and get their foot in the door.
Get a friend. A friend with money. A friend that is a mechanic and has a shop. Because the things today aren't like they were before, and it's a lot of work. You know, people have to there's so much behind the scenes things that people don't see, and it's not overly advertised anywhere, but it's a lot of work to have a monster truck. I mean, just manhandling the tires every other day or whatever it might be, depending on where you're at and what you're doing. It's a lot of work for a lot of these are husband and wife couples or a couple of guys, whatever, out there. And nowadays, everybody's trying to keep everything in one truck, a trailer, you know, that's contained and has everything in there. But it's a lot of work to keep everything up and keep it running, because people expect perfection nowadays. In the old days, you get by with a lot of stuff and you get booze once in a while, but you go back out and it was a learning thing. Now it's not so much the learning thing anymore. They want to see you go out there, compete or perform, and they don't want to see the stupid things that happen. Like I one of my biggest deals, I think it was in Ventura, I had been running for a day or two. I go to do the cars the opposite way that we've been running over all day. And I catch air, I'm coming down, and I snap one of the front tires off. And people loved it, you know, but nowadays they're going, boo, you know, they boo you out of the place. Equipment failures, they don't accept it the same way anymore. So you have to have a tough skin to start in this sport now.
You know, Bruce, we've learned a lot about you tonight and definitely got to reminisce on great stories. And I know you probably got a few more in the tank there, but we'll make this our last question for the evening. And I ask this on every single episode. When it's all said and done, and, you know, it's been a bit of time since you've been behind the wheel of a truck, but you're still active in the business because you're here on our podcast. But when it's all said and done, what do you want your legacy to be?
That I did something that at the time no one else had done. They did a van of 48s, and they made it work. I think that's a pretty good legacy, and people really enjoyed what I did. And I think that's pretty good. I mean, look at here we're talking, what is it, 28 years later or whatever? And it's maybe more. No, it's 38 years. I'm sorry. 38 years later, and you guys are talking to me, and I'm talking to you, and there's other people piping in on it. And it was a good time to be around all that stuff. It's just like the vanning before that. You know, there's not going to happen again. I guess that's it.
Now, you said it best there, Bruce. That's why we called you a pioneer in the business. There had to be somebody there to pave the way and do it first and make a count. And I think Vinny would agree with me. It's been a great road here and get to learn a lot about you. You mentioned how long your career took place. None of us were born when that occurred. Yeah. So for us, this is super cool to hear firsthand accounts from how it was back in the 80s.
Yeah, it was fun, and it's cool for you guys to – you guys are so used to seeing the new modern equipment and how it works and everything. The technology has gone so far that it's hard to remember or even believe that it was that primitive back when I started. You know, what – how come you're only running one hydraulic ram on the front and on the back, or where's your, you know, your half a dozen – shocks or whatever, because we ran a lot of shocks back then. Now everybody's running what, one per corner? I mean, it's just so much different. Everything's different, and it was a fun time. And you won't see show trucks anymore. You're going to see a work truck now, monster truck. They'll look nice, they have nice paint jobs and everything's clean underneath, but it's not like like with me with an interior in it, sunroof, all that kind of stuff, all the play stuff, that's all gone. Two seats, forget about it.
It's all the evolution of the sport, and you're right there in the thick of things when the sport just started to get a whole lot interesting. Wouldn't you say that, Vinny?
Definitely going to agree. I mean, it's been an awesome time on the podcast here in Old Stories. I mean, it's crazy to think how different it was back then compared to now. I mean, there's so many evolutions this industry has went through. It's crazy. You know, stage one truck, stage two. It's just awesome, and it was awesome having you on tonight, Bruce, and talk some old school monster trucks.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me, guys.
Including your old buddy, Steve Curcio. He says, looking good, Bruce. Good times, buddy.
Hey, I miss him.
Thank you so much, Bruce. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, I thank you for having me on. You guys enjoy the rest of your evenings, and we'll talk later.
Awesome. Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you, Bruce. That was awesome having Bruce on tonight.
It's a true pioneer tale. When we're on this podcast here, we like to tell different stories. And when Bruce reached out to us, and thanks to his son Lonnie as well for reaching out as well, we were so excited to have Bruce on. It was a different story for us, and it's something different to offer everybody here on the podcast. And we want to keep doing guys and gals from the old school as we continue to go on here with the podcast.
We're going to bring everybody on. It was awesome. You know, we like to call ourselves, you know, we bring everybody on, and it was awesome having Bruce on, learning about history of old monster trucks. And I definitely learned a lot myself. Like you said, Phil, we weren't born during that time. So most of the stuff back then I didn't know about, but you know, do some research and you find out a lot of cool things that happened back then.
That's why we do this. We're here to have the guests tell their story, and this will forever live in the archives.
For sure.
So we're not slowing down. We say it every week. Next week, find something very different, very special. As the time of recording this, it's 2020, and monster truck shows can be few and far between right now. We're very lucky for the first time since February there'll be a monster truck show in the state of Arizona. Monster X Tour will be in Yuma, Arizona at the Yuma County Fairgrounds, I believe.
Let's hear that lineup, Mr. Lineup Man.
Five trucks will be down there. It's got a veteran lineup. Some of the different trucks down there, Vendetta, Kamikaze, Rockwell, Red, Wrecking Machine, and the Rat Attack, plus a lot more. Now, we ain't giving them free press unless we get something back here, and that's why we're going to be working on something very special next week. We're going to be doing a live podcast at the event. We're going to be on here at a special time, so you're not going to see us at our usual 6 p.m. Pacific time. We'll be on a couple hours earlier because we don't want to interfere with pit party or the actual event itself.
Yes, you're hearing this correctly. We're doing a live podcast at the show.
At the show. We will be live with our guests. Now, who the guests will be, we'll let you know next week. So make sure you stay tuned to our social media channels where you can find out who will be joining us next week live from Yuma, Arizona at a special time, not 6 p.m. So make sure you stay tuned to what time we'll be coming on the air next week. But we've had a great run here so far. We're not slowing down. If you enjoyed our podcast here tonight, make sure you like and follow this Facebook page where you're watching this podcast live. If you're not listening live, that means you're on our podcast feed. wherever you can find podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google's Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, wherever you can hear sound at this point, you can find us. So if you're on the road or you're at the gym, you can hear us. You can go back in our archives. Here's some of our other old school episodes with guys like Seth Dalton and Gary Schott in our saloon sit-down with Hall of Famers Mike Galloway and Terry Woodcock, plus more Tim Delaney stories. We have a lot of great guys that we've interviewed in our archives, so make sure you check that out on our podcast feed or here on our Facebook page. Just go over to that videos tab, live video podcast. You can rewatch all of our past episodes. Plus, we upload them to YouTube as well. If that's easier for you, you can check out the replays on our YouTube channel.
And you know what? If you have someone you want to come on the podcast, send us a message. We respond to all of our messages, and we'll arrange something for you, and we'll get that done.
We'll get it done. We'll have your people talk to our people. We love having so many great guests on. Once again, we want to thank Bruce Gault for coming on board, and also Tim Delaney for surprising Bruce here tonight. And we'll catch you here next week live from Yuma, Arizona.
This will be interesting.